This poem for me summarized a whole lot of things that were sort of running around loose in some of the other poems, or not really in any of the poems so much as between them in the book. And it finally raises a question which is a difficult one, and which if some of the poems later in the book try to respond to one way or another. And there's a scene in the newest Teachings of Don Juan book that kind of fascinated me. This is number 3. I don't know if The Journey to Ixalan has come out now. And are you familiar at all with this book? I presume you are. It coming from the Southwest and all. The Teachings of Don Juan, A Separate Reality, and the new book. Some people nodding and some not. I have a suspicion that Don Juan resides somewhere in the vicinity of Tucson from the descriptions of things in the third book. But anyway, he has Carlos out trying to learn how to be a hunter and so on, and comes a particular crucial day when Carlos has built his trap on the spur of the moment, and he catches the rabbit that he's supposed to have caught, and Don Juan's explained to him beforehand that this is all well and good, and he's done it many times. Each time before this, Don Juan has undertaken to kill the rabbit and to prepare it right then for eating, and they've eaten them. This particular time, he catches the rabbit and he tells Carlos he's going to have to kill it. He's just going to have to kill it. It doesn't say you're going to have to kill it by yourself. And suddenly Carlos realizes he's never killed one before. And so he sees it in his trap and proceeds to go through all kinds of complaints and whatnot with Don Juan, telling him, you know, I really can't do this. I've decided it's not that important. We'll let the rabbit go and we'll just come back and so on. And Don Juan says it's too late. You can't turn back like that now. It's not even a choice. All of the powers have brought you this rabbit, and now you have to pay respect to the rabbit by doing what you set out to do, by finishing killing and eating it, and thanking it. And Carlos plays with it, he can't handle it. And so he proceeds to try and open the cage, and it's stuck. And so having tried to begin to open the cage, and it's being stuck, he begins finally to kick the cage, and finally stomps on the cage to break it open, and does, and kills the rabbit. It's really that book is full of things which are, if we're laughing, if we consider that funny, which of course it is in a way. That's a much more, one of the other scenes that's in that book is, if you're not familiar with it, the two people who run through it are Don Juan, who is an old Yaqui Indian, and is a man of knowledge. He's teaching Carlos about a little about mescaline, about mescalito, as he calls it. But he isn't really. He's stringing Don Juan along throughout a long period of time so that he can get him prepared to begin to learn about him. Anyway, at one point, Carlos is plotting. He's an anthropology student from Berkeley. He has some saving graces, which it takes a long time to perceive, but which Don Juan has immediately perceived. And almost everyone else who reads the book goes through very frustrated with what seems to be the bullheadedness on Carlos' part. But he always gets there, finally. And in this particular case, he's been put up on top of a rock to watch for the wind at twilight out on the desert. What he insists on calling the wind and what Don Juan insists on calling the powers. And he's stood up here for hours. You know, he got up well before twilight. And he's just standing there studying, scanning the horizon, you know, waiting for the chaparral to blow and rattle or whatever. And every time it does, he dutifully calls to Don Juan and says, you know, it's right over there. And Don Juan says, no, no, you fool, that's the wind. And so he starts and he looks around again, you know, waiting for the right ripples. And he's just there for hours. And finally, Don Juan is down below him all this whole time, just paying attention. Don Juan leaps up. He has tremendous agility. He leaps up and runs to this huge rock that's about 30 feet away and ducks around behind it. And Carlos thinks, oh my God, there's something horrible back there. It's a spirit or a mountain lion or something. And Don Juan knows it, you know. And then Don Juan comes back from around the rock and just as calm as if nothing in the world has ever happened, but he's just been out for a walk and is coming back from it. And he says, Don Juan, he says, you know, what did you do? And Don Juan replies, you know, he waits until he gets right up next to Carlos on the rock, and then he replies, there was nothing behind the rock. You know, very loud. And Carlos is very relieved that there was nothing behind the rock on the one hand, and on the other hand, almost falls over backwards that Don Juan is shouting at him. And he says, Don Juan, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing? And Don Juan says, I'm not doing anything. And then proceeds to do a whole bunch of really weird antics, standing on his head and cartwheeling and whatnot. And Carlos was getting quite upset. And finally he jumped down off the rock and he grabbed Don Juan and he shook him and says, what are you doing? He says, you're driving me crazy. You're behaving so unpredictably. That's the kind of language that Carlos would use too. You're behaving so unpredictably. And immediately Don Juan caught him dead in the eye and said, you've been driving me crazy with how predictable you've been acting. And then they proceed. This morning, when I had to kill a mouse to free it from my trap, I remembered the rat's gnawed foreleg my father made me see, sheer bone protruding from a thin, clenched paw. And this was our secret, father's and mine, kept from mother safe in her kitchen for years. When he died at the verge of my manhood, she fled north with me. There I learned the seasons in a long, strange year. I saw the crippled trees crumple into colors, shedding their brilliant disease of leaves that left the branches dead and trembling in the snow-white wind, magical and stark between street lamps and starlight. I learned to set out traps for muskrats, mink, and rabbits. And each dawn of the long first winter, silent in the moonlight, I hiked through the frost-bright, dream-like, sleeping trees that jutted like black bone from wounded snow. Alone among the creature drifts and banks that piled up in the months between my father's death and my own beating flesh, I was fearful and desirous of the gray silent wolves, a crushed thing's single shriek could summon from the dark. With my strong Confederate bayonet, I'd pry slick frozen steel apart, freeing stiff legs severed in my traps, now and then a worthless skin. One morning, early in the wind and while the blowing moon still wobbled, jostling the dark, fixed trunks of night, I heard a chain snap tight, then beating wings. Something white was fumbling at the base of the trees. Like snow rising from snow, a silver fox locked in its talons, the great white owl rose, then fell, dragged back by the trapped weight. Dazzled by the brightening air, its lunar eyes blazed in their mask of blind snow as I tripped on ice, reared to meet its stare. It challenged. I froze. Its white breast was wide with the heavy wings of a warrior angel. It dipped the hook of its beak in slow deliberation and stole a vivid eye from the skull, then turned to me, impatient, in an outburst of brilliance. It battered up out of the snow, blindly clumsy at first, then transfigured by the high light of ascent, a glide and glowing in the pale, soaring sky. Wet blood, bright in the decomposing snow, wound in a desperate circle of struggle, round and round the strict radius of the staked chain. All around me, the horizon tensed for dawn, encircling my vision with the limits of a saw-toothed land sharp against the sky. And from this trap's dead center, I looked up at the fatal stars, so innocent in their slow prison of seasons and hours. This morning, when I sent my wife and daughter from the room, they fled as if to witness death, were death itself. Am I to die? This accusation and their fear has followed me until I feel as if my own is a small, nodding skull I've crushed, and mine the one bright eye staring from its ruin. So I am the child again, facing your candor, knowing this time you must die, your face pass into my face, mine into others. What shall I tell them, Father? What can we tell to these strangers we've made from our love? Somewhere in the belly of the owl and the earth, we all stare incessantly from darkness to darkness soaring.